Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Getting Savvy in Health, Wealth, and Beauty. Important to note that everything is for entertainment purposes only. Please do speak and meet with a financial advisor before making any investment decisions. And also, please meet and speak with your GP before making any health or beauty decisions.
Okay.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. If anybody knew what we go through to press that button.
Yes. Oh my God. Tech.
That's why you're a doctor. Confusing.
Yeah.
That's why you're a doctor and I'm in finance.
Mm-hmm.
And we need some help. If anybody knows anybody who can help us.
Yes. The tech.
Check and social media.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow.
So, yeah.
So you had a big travel week last week.
I had
to fill in as my co-host.
How was it?
That was 2 weeks ago now.
Yes.
He was saying at the end of the podcast that him and Les should have one.
Oh my God.
Where they just talk about our podcast.
Yeah. Well, Les doesn't speak a lot. I don't know how good of a podcast it would be. But he can be a guest.
You know, but they're just so handsome.
That's it.
You have to watch them on YouTube.
That is right. That's right. No, we were in Europe and it was so interesting and just amazing. And, you know, I have to say it, Melissa, like the food was so great there. I never felt bloated.
Yeah.
I never felt uncomfortable. And I came back here and I had something I normally put in my coffee and it made my stomach not feel great. Like it's really so different. The fresh food over there and the vegetables and no pesticides and no GMOs. And I lost weight and I ate 10 times more than I normally would.
Yeah, it feels that way. When I've gone to Europe, I've had the same experience. But I don't know if I really am eating 10 times I normally would, or if I'm just ordering and at restaurants and not having the snacking during the day the same way, you know? Like whenever I've gone to Europe, like I go, you eat at your dinners, but you're so busy walking around, you're in bathing suits, so you don't kind of want to be as munchy here and there. And even though you're having a good dinner, you're also having wine. I tend not to eat as big portions.
That's it. You're right.
Yeah.
I ate everything, but just smaller quantities.
Smaller probably. Amounts.
And I have to tell you, you know, especially in Barcelona, our meals were a solid 2.5 hours long, just Les and I.
Yeah. It's so weird. They really dine there. It's different. And you take your time, you eat slowly, you have small courses.
It was incredible.
And I did this post on my Instagram the other day showing what's the difference between why is this meal a weight gain meal versus why is this meal a weight loss meal? And it was the exact same food on the plate. But in one of the pictures, I had all the dishes still on the table. And that's why people often gain weight because they go back for seconds and thirds, you know. If you're at a restaurant, you're portioned out the amount you're to eat and that's it. Whereas when people eat at home a lot, they leave the big pasta dish, the big meat dish, everything's on the table. So they keep eating double the serving or three times the serving.
You know, right.
You don't really do that when you're traveling and you want to do up your tight fitting dress.
Yeah. We went to a fancy event when we were in Monaco and we'd had two guy friends, at the pool in Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat and we had a beautiful lunch together. I'm like, I have got to fit into this dress tonight. Like I have got, and there was no give because it was made out of silk.
Yeah.
And they were like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, no, it's the only dress I can wear to this thing. So I have to fit into it.
Like, there you go. So I don't know if it's so much like Europe and the lack of pesticides and the fresh fruits, or is it just when we're in Europe, you want to be good and wearing your nice clothes and tanning and bathing suits, you know? I don't know.
True.
Curious to hear what other people think about that.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't normally feel jet lag, but I do. Can you describe that at all? Is it like, what is it? Is it such a thing? Is it, what do you think of it?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. Crossing time zones is really hard. It's definitely, I think it takes more of a toll on you as you get older, for sure. And it also depends on the combination of things. Like it's the jet lag, but it's also often on these trips, you might be drinking more and all of a sudden your body's just into this whole reset of like feeling tired from the trip itself, plus feeling jet lagged. Did you take a sleeping pill or anything on the plane?
No.
Did you travel back? Was it a day flight or did you travel overnight?
Day flight.
Yeah. So it's, and you didn't sleep. Did you sleep or no?
I did. I slept a little bit, and yeah, but then the problem is like you wake up early, and we
Yeah.
have dogs who sleep with us, and then the person who was staying with them wakes up early. So you're waking up like a couple times a night. So it was a bit much.
Take some time. Are you taking
Yeah.
melatonin?
Melatonin? No.
So there's some theories out there that, first of all, it helps to stay hydrated.
Oh.
It helps to get to the new time zone time right away. So like switch your mindset right away to, no, I'm back on Toronto time. Don't think, oh, well, it was this time in, Barcelona or this time in Monaco. And also some people say that if you start taking melatonin a few days before and after you travel, it can help sort of reset your circadian rhythm. So those are a few hacks that you can try. And staying hydrated, make sure you drink a lot on the plane.
Okay. Well, funny you should say that about the melatonin, because I've been so frustrated with this whole pattern. I brought some with me. I just got to the cottage. So
Oh, there you go.
I'm in the boathouse, and I will be sleeping like a baby.
So I find coming back from Europe not as hard as going there. Like I find that time just because when you get back, you get the hours back.
Yeah, I
Right? So
know.
I find it's usually not as difficult, but still it, takes a
Yeah.
toll. I don't know
Okay,
how some of these
melatonin.
businessmen do it that are constantly traveling in multiple different time zones. Like,
Well, they don't look that great.
yeah, it takes a toll on their health for sure.
Yeah, they look tired. What's in your docket this week?
So because today's going to be a bit of a shorter episode, because I have to
Yeah.
speak in about 45 minutes,
Okay.
there was a new study on coffee and aging that I thought was interesting. So I was going to touch on that.
Okay.
Also, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that I thought was interesting. It said, new tests promise to reveal the secrets hiding in your blood. So it was talking about some new blood tests available that are biomarkers for and can pick up diseases beyond what we have currently available. So specifically, they're looking at liquid biopsies. In other words, a blood test looking to pick up early stages of cancer. Also, there's a test for colon cancer as well as for Alzheimer's. So I wanted to touch on that. And then I wanted to talk about Kylie Jenner revealing online the make, model, size of her breast implants and the surgery.
What?
Yes, I know.
No.
Dive into that as well.
Oh my God, that's more exciting than what I have, even though what I have, I think, is known around the world. So why don't we start first? Let me just say one thing about the markets in the United States. They are actually the S&P 500, so representing 500 companies, is up 20% since April the 8th, just about 2% below the highs, which was back on February the 8th. So April the 8th was Liberation Day when they came up with these tariffs to help America and liberate them from the trade policies with trading partners. So in other words, the market recouped, and it tends to recoup. So A, don't be fearful, and get involved and don't panic and sell when the market's down. So that aside, the big news, obviously, I'm sure that everyone has seen, I would think, is the feud going on between Elon Musk and President Trump. And it started because Elon Musk does not agree with this reconciliation bill and the spending and the deficits that it causes in his mind. And obviously they used to be on the same page. They appear not to be on the same page. They've had this, parting of views. And then you see President Trump saying that he would threaten to cancel Musk's government contracts, which obviously he uses in many, if many of his businesses. And then you had Elon Musk say that there's a reason why the Jeffrey Epstein files have not been released, and it's because DJT is part of that. So, low blow,
The
beyond.
bromance is over.
O over as we know it right now. And then, of course, there were reports this morning that maybe they were going to talk, but the White House apparently denied that.
Well, and then I just saw a few funny memes where one with Trump was like, well, Elon's just so mad, so angry because he misses me, And then I just saw something online. Now, I don't know if this is true yet, but a video of Trump with Epstein at a party. Hanging out and this sort of thing. So I don't know. It's just
Yeah.
very, it's just all very entertaining and public. It's very different from the 4 years of Sleepy Joe, but and just, you don't really know what's going on. Your portfolio is looking good. Yes, there's too much of a deficit. And now all of a sudden it's just, each week is something different. Like, it's definitely more exciting and comedic and entertaining, but you know, at the end of the day, are the outcomes going to be different? I mean, I don't know. Like, I know, you know, I was also listening to the All In podcast last week where they agree with Musk that the big, beautiful bill, you know, isn't so beautiful when it comes to putting America into more debt. And they were all very hopeful with Doge and Elon and Trump that they were going to really reduce the deficit and get the U.S. out of debt. And this bill just seems to look like it's going to, you know, cut taxes for the top 1%, but then add more debt. So I don't know. I mean, I'm a Canadian. I'm not an American. I'm certainly not that savvy on politics, but.
Well, and I think to your point though, you know, there's economists who believe that it will increase the debt deficit. And then there are those that are saying that, you know, the amount of money that they're getting in from the tariffs, as well as it being pro-America, pro-growth, we don't have even seen all the impact of potential tax cuts, as well as deregulation, that actually will spur the economy on. And if you have to take, you know, a bit of a hit from a deficit perspective sooner, and in the intermediate term, that's part of this process. So it's almost as though both can be right. Now, people wouldn't say, you know, anybody like an Elon Musk is saying, no, the other side's not right, but not to put words in his mouth, but you know, sometimes this is all about timing as well, and how, like, what is your time frame? And that's the same thing with investing. You know, if you like a company, but it takes 5 years to turn around versus somebody else who is expecting 2 years, they're going to sell it 2 years, and 2 years plus one day, this company's turned around. So,
well, that's like talking about the Tesla stock. I mean, I think on this news, it was down what, like 20%
yesterday when this came out. And so when this news came out of this feud, the stock went down 16%. It closed down about 14.5%. And, you know, I always listen to the All In podcast as well. And, you know, I've been reading, you know, not in the beginning of my vacation, but towards the end when I knew I had to get back into business, you know, more and more about this bill and Elon's view on it. And I kept thinking, like, well, how's this going to work? Because it's, you know, opposite to what President Trump wants and is saying. And so yesterday morning, I decided to sell my Tesla stock before
you and a lot of other people.
No. Before the negative news came out.
Yes. Before the negative news about Trump and
Epstein. That's what. Yeah.
Oh, the negative news about Trump and Epstein. Interesting. Yeah.
Because it just, you know, I'm no timing expert, but just, it just didn't feel like this was going to go
well.
Like, how does this, you know, end? But anyway, the stock that Tesla, so it was down about 15% or so. It's up now about 5% today. So, you know, this is important too, for people to understand that sometimes when negative news comes out, people panic, they sell. It's called a knee-jerk reaction. And then you have all of the kind of computer programming, algorithm trading models that when they see a stock go down, they pile on it. So a lot of the time those moves can be exacerbated to the downside and to the upside.
You know what I find amazing? Trump is how old? 80? Is he 80 yet or 70? I don't know. He's either late 70s or almost 80, or I don't know. But how does he have the energy to have these feuds and to talk about the jet lag, the traveling back and forth between different countries? Like, it's amazing. Like, oftentimes people get to a certain age where they're like, ugh, I'm too tired to argue. You know, let it be. Let's agree to disagree. But he's out there punching. I mean, it's, you know.
Well, you're the doctor.
I wonder if he drinks. Yeah, I wonder if
drink.
He
Melissa,
no, drinks coffee.
Oh.
Because, I mean, this is, no, he doesn't, he's known to, like, not drink alcohol. He doesn't use drugs. So, you know, there's those things that are definitely helping with his aging and his cognition.
Sure.
A new study came out this week. Now, this was more geared towards women than men, but I guess you could potentially generalize it to men, that a large study was done looking at about 50,000 women from the, I think it was the Nurses Health Study, or Anyhow, they followed these women from like the 80s, and what they found was that the women that drank coffee, and specifically caffeinated coffee, because it didn't work with the decaf coffee or tea, tended to age better. They had better physical aging, better cognitive aging, and lived longer overall. And this is even when they factored out other confounding variables like exercise and smoking and other things. So there's something about coffee, and specifically caffeinated coffee, that seems to be correlated with better aging. So anyhow, he doesn't drink alcohol, he doesn't do drugs, but maybe he's drinking that Java.
Maybe he's drinking the Java.
I don't
Yeah,
know. Do you drink coffee?
do I? I do, but just a cup a day. Like I don't feel like it, I need it to wake up or anything. But Melissa, when I used to work on the trading desk, I used to drink three Diet Pepsis every morning starting at
Oh my God.
5:45.
So interestingly, it did not show that the people that drank caffeinated beverages like pops didn't have the same aging benefit. So I drink two coffees a day. And I always have. I think there are some days where I've gone without it. I don't get big withdrawal headaches or anything like that. I'm not massively addicted to it. I just feel better when I drink it, but it has to be before noon. If I drink it in the afternoon, I did this genetic test, this lifestyle DNA test that shows that I'm a slow metabolizer of it. So I don't, it will more likely, if I drink it past noon, to keep me up at night, which is what I do experience. But I find that it's obviously something about the caffeine. Plus, coffee has polyphenols in it, which are associated with healthy aging, antioxidants. So,
So
yeah.
tell, but this is really interesting. I don't think a lot of people know about this, and I know you mentioned it once briefly to me, probably when we were just out socializing. But what is the lifestyle DNA test?
So it's a genetic test that looks at your base pairs of your chromosomes and tells you what you're at risk for, not in terms of big diseases like breast cancer or those sorts of things, but more things in with your exercise performance, diet, nutrient needs. So it tells you how likely you are to be celiac, sensitive to gluten, lactose intolerant. It tells you if you're at risk for being addicted to nicotine, alcohol use disorders. It looks at the APOE4 gene for Alzheimer's that tells you if you're more likely to develop early onset Alzheimer's. It tells you what nutrients you're at risk for being deficient in.
Is
So,
it that this sounds like a miracle test?
it's not, it helps you glean a little bit more insight and information into your own body. So, like for me, I found it was interesting that I was worried about the APOE4. That was the one I was really worried
What's
about.
that?
The APOE4 gene that puts you at increased risk for Alzheimer's. So people that have that gene have a higher likelihood of getting Alzheimer's disease later in life. So I was happy that I didn't have that gene. It also tells you about certain, nutrient needs. So, some people on it are more likely towards vitamin C deficiency. So you might think, okay, like there's so many supplements you wonder whether you need to take or not take. This just sort of looks closer at, okay, well, if you are thinking of taking some, these ones would probably be most worthwhile.
Interesting.
Look at some information. I mean, it's definitely accurate in the sense that they are your base pairs, they are your chromosomes. Like it's looking at your DNA, but it's only telling you that genetic piece. It's not accounting for other, lifestyle things or mental things.
So, Melissa, is this is like where do you get this
We
test?
offer it at Wellness House. You can order it online, and it's just a cheek swab to get the DNA.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay. I'd like to do that. All right, I digress. Where were we? We were talking about coffee and how you
Yeah, well,
metabolize.
because I was talking about Trump and his
He's 78.
like that's so impressive. I will say, like, I gotta give it to him that he, whether I agree with all his policies or not, or his personality or not, he's sharp and it has energy, that's for sure. Oh, his comebacks and his comedy, it's like
He's sharp.
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 Yeah,
Funny. People say he's funny.
he's super funny.
Yeah.
I mean, Saturday Night Live had one of its best seasons again because you got material. And even all the material, I don't know if you've watched, like all the late night talk show hosts, like Jimmy Kimmel, forget the other one, they're all posting funny things about Elon and Donald Trump because it's just material, right? It's,
Right. Right.
yeah. So,
Just FYI, he turned 79 in 8 days.
okay. I
Yeah.
wonder if Musk is going to be at his birthday party. They're going to cancel his invite, probably.
Maybe they'll make up.
Nope, I imagine they will.
All right. All right. Okay,
Oh.
wait. So, but back to the Tesla stuff for a second. So, I was listening to a lot of various analysts on this, right? So just as an example, and this is again why we like, I think it's just so interesting to invest because it represents what's going on in the world, including what we're talking about here between Trump and Elon. So the stock went down. And, there are some analysts out there saying that President Trump wants the greater good, which is, robo-taxis, AI, Starlinks, SpaceX, all of that, and Tesla. So, to not worry, and maybe now is a buying opportunity. And then there's other analysts will say there's too many unknowns at this point, and that so much of the run-up in the price of Tesla was almost driven by the relationship between the two of them and what could become of that.
So I think that's short-sighted, though. I think that if you're going to buy, and I know we talked about this earlier when you bought Tesla, you looked at it because of AI
Yeah.
and their AI and robotaxi and the fact that Musk, even though he's, a little bit unpredictable, is a extraordinarily smart guy and has a history of success, So I think you were looking at those things, not just, oh, I'm buying Tesla because of, because Elon and Trump are friends.
Oh yeah, no, I wasn't. Right.
So, but
Yeah.
actually, I want to listen to Cathie Wood, who's the famous
Yeah.
investor who's been always very, very bullish on Tesla and crypto, actually. She was just interviewed on the podcast, The Diary of a CEO. It's one of my favorite ones. He's excellent. It's in the UK and he has really good guests. And so it's on my list of ones I'm
Okay.
hoping to do this week when I work out.
Yeah.
Because I'm really curious to hear what she has to say. Because she
Yeah.
thinks that Tesla's going to go super high. I mean, she's,
Right.
yeah.
And she's been a perma bull on all of these companies and all these stocks. That's what she was known for, Cathie Wood and ARK Investments. And because of that, she ends up a lot of the time paying higher valuations for these types of stocks. And therefore, when the market isn't favorable or doesn't work as well, she would be underwater for a while.
Yeah.
So just
So
a
I'm just curious to hear what she has to say. I own a Tesla, right? So I drive Tesla and I keep thinking about it in terms of whether, and they make jokes about it self-driving, like the self-driving car is going to drive itself off a cliff or something. Do I think, like, I haven't been in a Waymo to compare it to Tesla self-driving.
Yeah.
Like, I still don't know if how close it is for it to really be out there.
Well, they're going to be demoing it in Austin next week.
Okay, well, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
What I think is that's interesting that they're demoing it in Austin next week. Tell me more about that.
Rolling it out. Yeah, I
Is
haven't
that?
looked at it enough, but I think it's so the 13th. I feel like it's the 13th that this comes
So
out.
I find that interesting because if that's a success, the stock is going to go up huge, in which case it dropped now almost intentionally so you could scoop up more for it to go up. I don't know. I don't trust anything anymore. It seems like every time there's some big news that causes something to drop, like tariff announcement or anything, it's like, oh, buy it now because, I really feel that way. So
Well, I just look at some things as buying opportunities,
I
right?
think
Like,
get
so
back in, Catherine. Get back
get
in on
back in. Thanks, Melissa. Maybe speaking of which, one of the things, so I think sometimes people will think about this and they'll say, look, I'm scared to buy single stocks. That's what we're talking about. They're called single stocks. But it's still a company, and you own a company, you own a share of a company. And if you like the company, the product, you don't need to be afraid of a stock going up and down a couple of percentage points or what have you. But what I wanted to talk about today as well is, if you don't want to, as you dip your toe in, or even just to diversify, you don't want to own a single stock, you can own ETFs. So I thought it would be worthwhile to just talk a little bit about what ETFs are again, mm-hmm. how they're different than a mutual fund, and which is kind of why they evolved. And one that I bought that is benefiting because of an area in the market, which is the NASDAQ. So you remember what an ETF is. What is it? Do you remember what it stands for?
An exchange traded fund.
Correct. They're very good. Very good.
I had my two cups of coffee. I'm sharp.
Bravo.
Haven't traveled to Europe.
What's a what?
I haven't traveled to Europe recently. No jet lag.
There you go. Mm-hmm. And so what does that really mean? An exchange traded fund. Okay. So it's take a guess?
So an exchange traded fund. So it's a fund. It's a basket of stocks that you can trade on the stock exchange.
That's right. That's exactly it. So prior to exchange traded funds being created, mm-hmm. a lot of people bought mutual funds, which they still do. I think most people listening will know what a mutual fund is. You give your money to a money manager, you know, who manages maybe $2 billion to $10 billion in one fund, one specific fund, but you own a unit of that fund. So that unit represents all of the stocks that he owns in that fund. And the unit value goes up based on the stocks going up or down, right? The unit value. So say you buy into this fund, a mutual fund, and the value is $10. You hope that over time, the value of that unit, which represents the underlying stock, goes up to 20. Okay. Then you've doubled your money. So the thing is, with a mutual fund, you can't trade it. You give them your money. If you want your money back, you have to give them a notice to redeem your units. As opposed to the exchange traded fund, it's a fund, so basket of stocks, but there's a symbol on an exchange, so the TSX or the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ, and you don't have to wait to redeem, you know, to call in and redeem your portion of that mutual fund company. You can just trade it as is. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's on exchange, to your point, traded fund.
And so they tend to have much lower fees because you don't have that. Yeah.
But yeah, they tend to now, some of them have gotten, like, now they call them like smart ETFs or whatever, right? So where they actually have a person making some decisions, but originally they were created just to represent the market, just to put all the stocks that are financial companies in this one basket, all the tech companies in that one basket. So because of that, there wasn't somebody really, you know, managing it to the same degree. And in other words, that those stocks are just going to do what the market does, as opposed to somebody who's managing it and saying, no, those stocks and not all of those financial companies are good. I'm going to pick the two best ones. So the mutual fund company managers will say, I'm better, you know, at picking the stocks that are really going to outperform versus the ETF that's going to hold all of them or a portion of them. Now, as I said, the ETF providers, so the ETF companies, have come out with these smart ETFs many years ago that have a little bit of a manager overseeing it and therefore a little bit higher fees. But in general, the ETF fees are a fraction of what you pay for in a mutual fund company. Mm-hmm. Is that helpful?
Yeah. I mean, I think that for someone that's not a sophisticated investor, which I would say is most people, it's just easier way to not have to pay higher fees and not have to look at it as often, not have to worry about trading, and just being able to invest in ETF that represents the S&P 500 if you want, you know, or the NASDAQ or the TSX if you're Canadian or emerging markets or whatever you want them to be, and just put it in there and let it do its thing, hoping that over time they will go up as the markets have tended to do over history.
Yeah. You
know, that's the way I sort of think about it, and then take a small amount of your investments and say, okay, this is my fun money, and this is where I'm going to pick a few individual stocks, but that represents a small percentage of my portfolio rather than a larger percentage.
Right.
That's how I do it. I mean,
yeah. Two things though. One is that the mutual fund company manager too, or as well, you know, you put it in with them and you hope, like, you don't need to look at it, and they're taking care of it and they're going to manage those stocks. Right. That portfolio.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're losing so much in fees that
potentially
could be compounding over time, you know,
and that's,
always, yeah,
that's the argument.
Not always, but I'm saying that this is, I think.
Right. So that's the argument for ETFs because the, you know, mutual fund companies charge more. But then the other, so I kind of do it in a couple different ways. For me, on the mutual fund front, if there's an area that I think needs a really, not even an area, but for me, like I used an energy money manager because energy stocks and just even owning the energy ETF, if you really know what you're doing, you can do very, very well having a manager. So for me, it was very worthwhile to pay the fees because he quadrupled my money. So, you know, and by the way, it's not even, that's not even sector specific. Sometimes if you know that that manager is just so good, then it's worth the fees. So I like a mixture of ETFs, fund managers, and then owning my own stocks as well. But,
that makes sense. I mean, I think that's a good, but you know what I was thinking of? Okay. So for the average person, and we were talking about this because you had your annual checkup a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, we recommend that most people once a year go to their doctor and just have an annual review to get a sense of where you're at, do some blood work, get a physical exam, think about screening tests. They should have like an annual physical with your money, you know? I guess the people that have an active manager, maybe they do, but for the average person, you know, that like they, you need a
great
check.
Idea.
Yeah. I think it is a good idea. You
great
know?
Idea.
Yeah. And just someone just like, here's an hour a year that you're going to put it in front of you with an expert. And this is your annual physical to see if you're healthy financially.
Well, yeah, and I think people do it on an annual basis, but I really feel like people should look at these things on a quarterly basis. You know, like, have I saved money? Did I make money? You know, do I want to make more money? Do I want dividends? Do I want, like, and understanding the world a little bit more. And it makes you, you know, even for when you do go and see your investment advisor, you know, I have investment advisors, you know, a couple. So, and it's actually had a call
once here.
No, I had a call with somebody yesterday, like just, you know, and then somebody else last week, like, cause I like to talk about it and hear what there's, you know, I'm a big, big, big believer, as I'm sure you are. Nobody has a monopoly on knowledge. And so I like to listen. I like to read and talk. Like, I find when you talk to people, I also had, by the way, I had two meetings yesterday after just getting back from travel. I'm like, I booked myself way too much, but it was all about this kind of stuff. Right.
Yeah.
So, because then you learn what people are thinking. So anyway, no, I think you're right. I think it could even be quarterly, and there might be some interesting way just to do it. And even the checkup would be like, have you opened an account yet? Have you opened one up?
Like, yeah.
You know,
have you thought about, it's the same thing. Like, if you say to someone, you know, that's 50, have you had a mammogram yet?
Right.
Bone density. Have you had a colonoscopy? Have you got the shingles vaccine? So I think the same thing.
Yes.
Is with somebody at 18, you know, have you opened up a TFSA? Have you opened up a FHSA or whatever they're called, the first home savings account? Are you going to start contributing to an RSP? What's your plan? Like, there just needs to be that.
Yeah. You know? Well, anyway. And to your point, like, it's June 6th. So, you know, a quarter from now, anybody listening, we'll check in 3 months. Have you opened up a TFSA? It's giving away money if you don't open one up.
Yeah, 100%. So let's segue.
But can I say one more thing? Yeah. One more thing. Because what I wanted to mention was on the ETF front, and that's why I wanted us to make sure we understood what it was. I did want to make sure that I had exposure to the tech sector in addition to owning individual stocks, because they had been hit and I felt like it was a nice time to kind of get back in. So I bought the NASDAQ, right? And I wanted to use Canadian money. So how do you use Canadian money? I know we've talked a little bit about this, but how do you use your Canadian money and buy US markets? A lot of these ETF companies do the currency conversion for you. They have these products. So I bought the BMO NASDAQ ETF, and the ticker there is ZNQ. And it's been up by about 9% in the past month.
Yeah.
So it's a nice, again, if you have just Canadian dollars, you say, wow, all these tech stocks look so good. I don't know what to buy, but I know I want US tech exposure because they're the biggest and the best in the world. BMO ZNQ is one you can look at. Okay, moving on. Sorry.
Nice. Well, I was going to say, and I think this should be the title of our podcast this week. So moving on from Trump's big, beautiful bill, let's move on to Kylie's big, beautiful boobs.
Yes.
So this people found shocking. I guess she posted a TikTok or something, and one of the people commented saying, can you tell us the size, what size you got? And she actually responded. And she said exactly, she said she got 445 cc's.
Come on.
That was the size of moderate profile.
Okay.
And then she said the name of her surgeon, who I did write down.
Okay.
And I put his name now, but I will tell you.
Okay. He's going to get,
I
know. He's going to need another
Garth
number.
Fisher.
Garth Fisher. Okay.
Yeah. When I looked him up, he was married to, do you remember Brooke Burke?
She was
a model from Wild On, you know?
Yeah.
Anyhow, he's not married to her anymore.
Okay.
It doesn't look like he has a current spouse, but anyhow, 445 moderate
That's
profile.
That's huge.
Seems large. So for anybody like listening that hasn't explored the world of breast implants, when you're choosing implants, you have to choose your size. Then you have to choose the material. Do you want them to be saline, which is basically salt water, or silicone? And do you want cohesive silicone gel? And then you have to choose the profile. A low profile means that it doesn't project very much. A moderate profile is medium, and a high profile means that it's going to project out far, out further from your chest.
Right.
So 445, I mean, in the scheme of thinking about it, the smallest implant you could probably do is about 100 cc's. I don't think they come any smaller than that. I think a cup, they consider like a cup size to be around 100, 150.
Okay.
So, you know, I would say 445 is on the larger size. Now, there are some women that have 600 cc's. So, but anyhow, so that's her size and that's her profile and that's her surgeon.
Did she say whether she used silicone or saline?
Silicone.
Silicone. Yeah. So Melissa, what's your view on this? Because, you know, silicone got a bad rap. And then wasn't there the gummy one too? And then that got a really bad rap.
There was the gummy bear one that was recalled because it was a very small risk of a certain type of lymphoma associated with it.
Okay.
Very small risk, but still it recalled. So you can't get those anymore.
Okay.
But they still have the round cohesive silicone gel ones available. And the reason that they are cohesive silicone gel is because, like a gummy bear, when you, let's say you were to cut them or rupture them, it's not going to spill out silicone all into your body. It would break, a gummy bear breaks and just stay sort of together. Yeah.
And so, but what's the view now, since we're on the topic, what's the view now about people say saline doesn't look as natural, doesn't feel as natural. And I think you can see the ripples or no?
Yeah. So that's the downside of saline. So they, it's true. So they sometimes say they don't feel as natural. And because they're not as soft, they may not look as natural. And because it's just a, think about it as like a water balloon, that if you're thin or if you lean over, you can sometimes see the rippling of where the water is. But, you know, for people, it all depends on your chest. If you have a large chest with fat that's going to cover it, then that's not as much of an issue. And so that, more projection with the saline than you can with the silicone.
So that rippling isn't, that's the water?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just a poorly done boob job.
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And then what do you think is the best way to have them now? Because it went from like belly button to underarms to nipple to underneath
So you
boob.
can't do underarms with a silicone gel implant. You can only
Okay.
do it with a saline implant because the saline is filled up once they're already in. So they insert
Oh.
them not filled up, so it's smaller, and then they fill them once they're inside the chest. So
Okay.
you can't do that with a silicone because it's already the size it's going to be. So your choices are going to be sort of underneath the breast or periareola, like around the nipple. So
Okay.
I mean, these are decisions to discuss. I'm not a plastic surgeon, but these are
Yeah.
the types of things you still want to be informed before you think about whether you want to get it, and just to know the questions that you want to ask.
Yeah.
Surgeon. Because people think it's just a question of size, but it's not. You have to really think about the profile. Yeah. Oh, and she also said that she got it half under the muscle. So that's the other decision you have to make,
What?
whether you're going to go over the muscle or under the muscle.
She said it did half.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I've never heard of that.
Half
Do you
under, half
know?
over.
How would you ever even do that? Well, we'll ask Garth Fisher.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seriously.
My God.
Garth Fisher, he is going to be getting, I don't know who's going to get more calls, him or Kris Jenner's plastic surgery
Yeah.
in her face, that Dr. Levine in New
Is that
York.
okay? So two things. First of all, I hope everybody's as interested in boob jobs as I am, because I am interested. I've been thinking about it for so many years. I've
Yeah.
never done it. So, but it is helpful because, again, sometimes when you go to these offices, you don't get a lot of time. So, right?
No.
So it is important. But then, yeah, Kris Jenner. I keep wondering when I see her face, because she actually looks just like Kim now.
Yeah, they're saying that she got like the world's best facelift, and obviously she got resurfacing as well. And I suspect she also got some fat transferred into her face as well. And I also think a lot of the pictures have like AI editing
That's
on
what
them.
I'm thinking.
Like, there's no way. I mean, I've seen videos of her where she also looks great, but I still think they use a special camera, and
Yeah.
there's no way that it looks like that in person. Although I do think she looks amazing,
Yeah.
though, like,
I know.
but
I mean,
definitely
I've,
different than she used to.
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she looks great. And what's the name of that doctor?
Levine.
Levine.
In New York.
Oh,
So he's in
that's.
New York and Garth Fisher is in LA.
Okay.
And I'm sure that they are very, very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
But there's going to be a lot of people that are like, okay, this is what Kylie got. My body's sort of similar to her. So I'm just going to take what she got and then go travel to South America or wherever, some
Oh, yeah.
expensive Costa Rica, and go get it done there for a fraction of the price. Which
Yeah.
has some risks associated with it. You have to make sure that you go to like a board certified surgeon, someone that's, well reviewed and clean and safe and,
Yeah.
anyhow.
When my husband and I were in the lineup in Barcelona to go to Marbella, there was a couple there. The girl had that thing on her nose because she'd obviously just gotten a nose job.
Oh.
And then her husband had obviously just gotten his hair plugs done.
So they're quite that. They're like, okay, medical tourism.
Medical tourism, yeah. I
Speaking
find
of
it,
medical
yeah.
tourism,
Yep.
there, some Canadians, there's some tests that you can get in the US that you can't get in Canada. So there's a lot of people that will fly to the US, like to the Mayo Clinic, or there's this place called Fountain Health. I don't know if it's Fountain Health or Fountain Life, but they have some tests that we actually now are able to do them here in Canada and have brought them in. So one of the ones that I was going to talk about from this Wall Street Journal article, it was talking
Yes.
about how there's three blood tests that are kind of new and in the US now that we're starting to get in Canada as well. So one of them is Guardant Health has a blood test looking for a biomarker for colon cancer.
Oh.
So this one's really interesting. I haven't seen this one in Canada yet, but I'm looking into potentially getting it here.
Nice.
It says last year, the FDA approved Guardant Health's Shield blood-based test for primary colorectal cancer screening in average risk adults age 45 and over. So a study enrolled 20,000 average risk adults and found that the test detected 83% of colorectal cancers. So that's not
Wow.
bad. So 4 out of 5, as confirmed by a colonoscopy. So they confirmed those cancers with a colonoscopy. And it had a 10% false positive rate. meaning one in every 10 people said, yes, your marker's positive, but they went on to have a colonoscopy that was negative. However, the test sensitivity for detecting precancerous lesions or polyps was only 13%. So what does that mean? So the reason that we'd suggest a screening colonoscopy at age 50 is because we want to catch those precancerous polyps that are growing in the colon before they turn into a cancer. And when you do that with a colonoscopy, you also have the ability to remove them, to skip off that polyp. So it's like a diagnostic thing, but it's also a treatment thing as
well. Makes sense.
Right. So a colonoscopy is still a better test than the blood test, but it's only good if people are willing to get it done. So there's a lot of people that are like, I don't care. I don't want it. And if you're in that camp, you know, then a next, so this would be a really good option because colon cancer is becoming more and more prevalent, especially in younger people. So that's a new blood test that's interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
And the next one is one called Grail Gallery Test. Now, this is a liquid biopsy test. So what does that mean? A biopsy, we tend to use that term when you're looking to detect cancer. So this is liquid. It's a blood test that uses AI to identify patterns of DNA that could have been shed from a tumor. Okay. So it's basically looking in the blood for cancer DNA. Exactly. Yeah. Now it says Gallery has a 76.3% sensitivity for 12 of the deadliest cancers that comprise 2/3 of all cancer deaths. Okay. So that means for these deadly 12 cancers, it's going to pick up 3/4 of them. Okay. Oh. And then it said it's a false positive rate of 0.5%. So that's pretty good. That means only 1 in 1,000 people are going to get a positive result. And then turns out they don't have cancer. Cause that's what we worry about. We worry about, you know, stressing someone out unnecessarily. Imagine telling someone, oh, the test is positive, and then they think they have cancer when they work them up and it's not there. So that would be a false positive.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so we actually offer that at our clinic at Wellness House. We're the only place I can think of in Canada that's offering
Wow.
That.
Which one? The Grail?
The Grail.
And so, listen, by just like how much is, like,
so I again, mean, pricing depends. So these are paid tests. Like these are not government funded tests. Right. So it's not inexpensive. I think it's a couple $1,000s.
Yeah.
Now, some insurance companies will pay for it. Some you might want to pay for it with a health spending account. But for some people that have a strong family history of cancer and they're concerned about it, then it could give them peace of mind to do this test.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, Melissa, like there's such a trend now with respect to being proactive, being your own advocate, and longevity, that I think all of these tests, I mean, I know they're expensive and definitely out of reach for some people, but again, it goes back to two, like getting savvy in health and wealth. Like maybe your goal is you want this test, you have to save up, and you're hoping that some of your stocks are going to, you know, if they go up, you're going to take 10% off the top and use that 10% and put into your health fund.
Yeah.
You know, combining both.
You know, and I think about it a little bit like an actively managed health, like an actively managed fund. It's possible that someone that's getting actively managed and getting all these tests might not at the end of the day live longer or be healthier than someone just more passive about it. But I think that the combination approach, like you mentioned, is probably the right one.
Yeah. You know,
don't be obsessive. Don't go pay for every single test and do everything. Right. Spend all these crazy fees, but I think that you want to look at your own personal risk and then figure out, talk to a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
interesting. Anyway. Okay. Yeah. Right. Melissa, I think you have to go, don't you?
I do.
Do you? Let me just mention one thing, two things. Lululemon, they lowered their guidance. The stock is down 20% because they are going to get hit by tariffs. And they're concerned about the consumer. The consumer is acting a little bit more conscientious and cautious. And then also we had jobs in the United States that came in better than expected. That's helping to fuel the market higher in the States. In Canada, we actually have the unemployment rate that ticked higher to 7%. I don't know if you saw that. So not too great there.
Yeah. So,
just because we always want to bring in the economic data. Like if you're out tonight at a cocktail party, you need to know where the jobs are because it's a reflection of both economies.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
I am worried about AI. I think the recession in Canada, losing, you know, there's going to be multiple reasons for job loss, I
Well, the
think.
tariffs are one for sure. We're already seeing it.
Tariffs, and then eventually AI taking over a lot of jobs.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that.
Are you not?
No, because I feel like, think about even, with social media and how that's changed a certain landscape. But then you had all these jobs that were created, like social media experts, right? Which again, we're looking for one. So, but it's so I think that it will take away from some jobs for sure, but it might create the opportunity for others that we don't even know about yet. So,
Maybe. I just don't know once these robot, like if this robot taxi goes well, think of all the people
I
Uber.
know. I do think about that, and you and I don't think either one of us bought the Uber stock yet, and because that is my
I
biggest
have it. I
concern.
own
Oh, you
Uber.
do own it. Okay. Oh, yeah, you did it. Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I think that like so many people are employed by them, and if this robo taxi takes off,
Yeah.
then you know, even like therapists, like so many people I know in the past month are using ChatGPT as a therapist.
Really?
Yes, as a marriage counselor.
Oh God.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, so we'll see what their marriage looks like, and then we'll know. Okay. All right. We'll chat later.
Okay,
Okay,
bye.
bye.